Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte is booming. No news there. The news is in the details of just how we're growing, where that growth is occurring, and how it promises to change the city in which we live. You can often gauge growth by the number of cranes rising around the city. Usually they're confined to uptown, but now they're rising in areas outside the 277 loop. South End will soon have not one, but two 23-story buildings. That will probably be a catalyst for more towers in this heretofore low-rise area, presenting challenges to traffic and parking. Dilworth is also about to experience some changes, as is the airport. And the nature of the business being done here will also change the landscape. We spend this hour getting into the details of all this with four business reporters who follow these changes every day. Tony Mesilla is editor of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter, who can be heard every Thursday morning on WFAE's Bizworthy segment on Morning Edition. Welcome to you.
Morning, Mike.
Katie Peralta is here. She's the senior editor at Charlotte Agenda. Good morning.
Morning.
And Daniel Shemtov is economic growth and development reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome to you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Ashley Fahey is joining us. She's real estate editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you for being here too.
Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us to Twitter at Charlotte Talks and watch the backs of two people's heads on Facebook Live. The rest of us are fully on camera. Katie, you need to change seats. First, it was a vast wasteland of underused abandoned mills and warehouses, vaguely dangerous. Then came the Blue Line, and with it, commercial and residential development. And now South End is getting taller. Just talked about that. Katie, one of the first breweries in the area, Sycamore Brewing, recently sold its property in South End to an Atlanta company. They're already planning, what, a 16-story tower on that site next door to the brewery. We have the Lowe's people building a 23-story tower on Camden. Lending Tree is moving into two 11-story towers going up on South Tryon at Carson. And now, which we'll talk about later, a new 23-story tower will rise on the site of Tupelo Honey at the east-west, near the east-west Blue Line station. First, what is the Atlanta firm that is moving in next door to what is now Sycamore doing? What kind of a building are they building, and what does that mean for Sycamore?
So Portman Holdings purchased the Shook Kelly building, I think last spring or something, and they will begin work on that pretty shortly. They're building a 16-story sort of like mixed-use office tower type building. It'll have retail on the ground level. Sycamore will take up a big prominent spot on the ground level. So when you think about one of South End's first breweries going from inhabiting an old auto garage surrounded by barbed wire to moving into the ground floor of a sleek brand new office tower, it's quite a change.
Locate this for us. Where is this exactly?
So this is at Hawkins, and I don't know what the cross street is.
It's Tremont, I believe.
I think that's it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right near the Ashton apartment buildings, right near the Publix.
Around the corner of the old Pikes.
Yes. Used to be right near the design center.
Yeah. Wow. Like that needs any more traffic, that area. So the Sycamore Brewing Company ultimately will move into.
Yes.
The office tower. So what happens to the property that they're on? Another tower coming our way later on?
So one of the owners told me that they plan to stay in their current building until until their new facility is ready, and that'll be about 3 years. You know how these things go. Sometimes it's much longer than that. And then after that, TBD. I think from the sound of it, it sounds like Portman will probably do another similar mixed-use, primarily office facility, maybe just on a smaller scale. So maybe it could be something like 10 or 12 stories as opposed to 16. But the Sycamore building, as we know it, will be raised. That, you know, funky gravel parking lot with like the big spools that they use as tables, those will be gone. It'll be filled with probably some sort of parking lot and parking garage, and, you know, it'll look much different than it does now.
Well, Tony, I was going to talk about that. Sycamore is not exactly fancy right now, but when they move into this sleek office tower, I guess they'll up their game and bring in a designer to
are dogs still going to be welcome?
in the office tower.
But that and all of the other things we're about to talk about with regard to how South End is changing, it seems is part of the corporate, how can I say this quickly, the corporatization, it's hard to say, the corporatization of South End. Is this a good thing? I mean, South End was, as I said, a vast wasteland, but right now, people kind of like it the way it is. So it's going to change substantially, right?
I mean, it's been changing. It's been changing a lot for years. And, of course, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, it used to be you wouldn't really want to walk around there too much at night. I mean, there was a bunch of industrial buildings. I mean, there were a couple little things, you know, here and there. Yeah, there was the old South End Brewery, massive old brewery, you know, around 2000 to maybe 2010, something like that. I guess they were a little bit ahead of the curve on this brewery phase. But, I mean, you know, it's just sort of part and parcel of a growing city. I think you're seeing, you know, the uptown area really expand into South End. And so we have all the things, you know, that come along with that. We have bigger buildings. We have, you know, all sorts of things. More people. The density in South End, I mean, it's gone up about 22 times since 2000, I mean, in terms of the population density. You know, so it's a growing area. I think there's no stopping it and there's no turning back. And you just see more and more announcements of these things, and they're going to keep on coming.
Yeah, go ahead.
The height of the buildings and the fact that they're building office is an extension of, like, employers trying to attract, you know, young employees, millennials in this tight labor market. I mean, that's kind of what these companies that keep moving there keep saying, you know, we want to be near our employees, and they're all living in South End. So when you think about, you know, the natural extension, I guess, of what it is now, it's these employers trying to be, you know, hip tech companies with their workers that live nearby and take the light rail or walk or scooter. So
I mean, if you haven't driven through South End in recent months, it's astounding the difference, because where they're right across from, I guess the Charlotte Post is still on Camden, but right across from the Charlotte Post on the Charlotte Art League, they put up this massive, glossy building. I don't know what's in it besides restaurants on the first floor, but it's gorgeous. But I mean, it's completely different from what was there before.
So that's the Dimensional Place building?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
When that was announced over 4 years ago, and they were still seeking approval for that, I remember Eli Portillo, the development reporter at The Observer at the time, wrote a story called "Does Office Influx Risk South End's Funky Vibe?" And I think that we can all say with a resounding yes that that is the case now.
So does that change people's reasoning for wanting to be there, or are young people just moving there because that's where 10 billion apartments have been built and it's affordable and you can eat and walk to things and you don't have to have a car? Really, well, you do, but you don't have to go to dinner in a car. You can walk. Is that going to change any of that, their desire to be there?
I think if you look at the kinds of jobs that are going there, I mean, you've got Dimensional Fund Advisors, you've got Lowe's building their hub for the tech workers. You see those kinds of workers moving into the neighborhood because they want to be close to all those things. But yes, I mean, it inevitably does change the fabric of the neighborhood, and it may, you know, change people's perception of it. Like, is it cool anymore? Has it gone mainstream? Has it gone corporate? And maybe that pushes them to other parts of the city. But I think the proximity and the kinds of retail that are going in there, and, you know, if you're close to your job, that's very appealing to a lot of people.
So a lot of these buildings, these taller buildings, have been pushed back deeper into South End, off the main drag, which is South Boulevard. But this new 23-story tower, Danielle, that's going to be going up where Tupelo Honey is, that's right on South Boulevard. Locate this for people who may not know. It's where the Pewter Rose used to be, for people who are old-timers. But locate this building.
Yeah, so it's at the East-West Station, and it's literally...
That doesn't mean anything to people who don't go to South. Where is it?
It's right where Tupelo Honey is. Does that
that
help?
That doesn't help either.
Okay,
no.
If you don't go to Tupelo Honey.
Intersection of South Boulevard and East-West.
Yeah,
it's like Grace Covenant Church, I think.
Yes,
it is.
Right. That's the church.
They're on the corner, and it's just south of that.
Yes, literally
on the east side.
Again,
no, the
parking lot of Tupelo Honey. That's where it is.
Okay, yeah. So what happens to Tupelo Honey, that building, and the building next door, which has another restaurant in it, which I cannot remember the name
of. Manchester?
Manchester,
yes. So far, they've said they're going to keep those two restaurants in place, but, you know, we'll see. They own
in the new building?
No, so they're building on the parking lot.
Right.
So the tower will go up on the parking lot.
So
right,
where will
next
they
to
park
them
in the interim? Because you can't park there
deck
now.
Yeah, they're just probably going to have to be a parking deck as part of the
You're gonna have to take a scooter, Mike.
I don't know. Yeah, and South Boulevard is definitely, I mean, of course this is like gonna face the rail trail, but South Boulevard is definitely a lot less walkable than the other parts of South End, so I think that will be an interesting dynamic to see.
Well, so I spoke to the developer of that project from Stiles Corp last week, and he was saying, you know, the site could bear potentially up to two towers eventually, up to
a million square feet of space,
which the first tower is going to be about 375,000 square feet. So if you think about it, you could almost do two-thirds of that additional development in a second tower.
Is it an office tower?
The first building, yes. The first building is going to be office with ground floor retail, but the venture partners, which is Shorenstein and Stiles, they've also done mixed-use residential. They've done all kinds of other things. They're doing a similar project in Florida right
just
now.
Just a little bit further south on South Boulevard, in South End, is at I think at Tremont and South Boulevard, is Atherton Mill. And they've got a bunch of things opening today in Atherton Mill because they've been working on completely changing what Atherton Mill is. It used to be kind of an artsy-fartsy place, and now it's retail.
Really fancy retail.
It's really fancy. And they put an apartment building on one side of it, which is 4, 5, or 6 stories tall. Is that long for the world? Or are they going to tear that down and put a big office tower there, too?
I mean, again, it's all kind of market-driven. We'll see what goes on. But those retailers wouldn't go in there if they didn't think they could get the kind of traffic that they need. There's a high demand for office, but converting an apartment building into office is not exactly an easy thing to do. But, I mean, maybe eventually it could, but there's still high demand for apartments. That kind of retail has become very popular in South End. We're seeing it at the Design Center. We're seeing it at Atherton Mill. So, I think for the time being that would stay.
Is this the shape of things to come? Has the plug been pulled on this bathtub and what's going to be flooding out is going to be more 23-story or more buildings? Is there a height cap, by the way? Can they go to 50 stories if they want?
Depends on the zoning. Some of South End is actually zoned UMUD, which is the most flexible zoning out there.
You could go
absolutely insane if you want with the height. But, I think it's, again, going to be based on demand, based on, again, even the cost of land. The cost of land in South End has, intensified with all this demand. In fact, the developers paid more than $20 million for 2 acres for the 23-story tower at the east-west stop. Yeah. And at some point, some people are going to say, that's getting a little high for me.
How long does prices have?
Prices owns their property? Does anyone know?
Okay,
they've been hounded by developers for years, and that will be the next Thirsty Beaver, right?
That's right.
I think. Yeah. Prices is like the middle finger of South End at this point, right? It's just saying.
But
we're
at
here
some
to
point,
stay.
Isn't there a price, so to speak, at which prices says,
everything,
"Hey, look, they're two blocks from that new Lowe's." I mean, you drive down there and you say, "How long are they really going to hang on?"
So, Tony, you reported recently on this South End boom by quoting a resident of the area that says, although he loves what's happening, he loves what he is, he can stand in his front yard and see the towers downtown. It looks cool and blah blah blah. The 2 mile drive that he has to the Dowd Y can take 20 minutes. Traffic. You should see the Facebook email comments I have right now on this screen about traffic. Let's see here. David on Facebook, we're turning into New York City South. Rachel on Facebook, parking is a big issue. A whole parking lot is gone due to the Lowe's building going up. That area is a mess. What new parking lots and options are coming? And where do we park in the meantime? So what about traffic and parking?
I mean, it's becoming kind of like it is in Uptown. If you come into Uptown and you want to go somewhere and park, you can't just easily pull on the street and expect to leave your car there all day. Now, that's just kind of comes with the territory, I think, in a growing city. The piece I did in the Charlotte Ledger on the traffic and parking quoted the guy going to the gym, and I got a bunch of emails saying, the guy's going to the gym. Why doesn't he ride his bike or walk? And there's this mentality, I think, in Charlotte that, well, look, we've put this massive, this big expensive light rail through there. We've made this walkable rail trail. People have other options. And so, there's this idea that we shouldn't worry about that, but obviously, as you're seeing, it's a big concern.
We'll come back to that, because we're not finished with traffic and parking yet. Tony Mesilla is with the Charlotte Ledger, Katie Peralta with the Charlotte Agenda, Ashley Fahey with the Business Journal. I'm Mike Collins. You're invited to a special Charlotte Talks public conversation on affordable housing called Finding Home, Charlotte's $270 million dream. We'll be at the Harvey B. Gantt Center on Tuesday, November 12th at 7 p.m. for a panel conversation about the progress Charlotte has made in the year since the affordable housing bonds in the city were passed. More information about this important discussion at wfae.org, and we hope to see you there. And Daniel Shemtob from the Charlotte Observer. I'll pick it up where I left off here. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Danielle Shemtob is with us from the Charlotte Observer. Ashley Fahey from the Charlotte Business Journal. Katie Peralta from Charlotte Agenda. And Tony Macia from Charlotte Ledger. There's a lot of Charlottes in there. That's We're talking about growth and development with four reporters who cover it every single day. And we started with South End because that's the closest to uptown, kind of. That really is experiencing this boom that's really going to reshape the entire area. And off the air, we were talking about this because parking and traffic is what everybody talks about when they talk about anything in uptown or anything now in South End. How far can they go with this? South End has very narrow roads. You got roads that were designed for the traffic of the 1910s, and that's not an exaggeration. Today we got honking SUVs and big trucks, and still we got two lanes and 23-story buildings. This is insane.
Yeah, I think we're in for a mess, quite frankly. I've asked all
but
the
we have city planners.
Well, I've even asked, Charlotte Department of Transportation, what's the plan for traffic in South End? How do you guys plan to mitigate this? And they're saying, well, we're going to try to drive more walkability and bikeability with the rail trail. But if you think about it realistically, some people will take the train to work or whatever, but it's going to be a very small percentage, especially for people who don't live near the Blue Line and, live in South Charlotte and have to drive.
You are the real estate reporter, Ashley. Real estate is about one thing, location,
right.
Location, location. And if you take that location and you jam it so that you can't park and you can't drive and it takes you 20 minutes to go three blocks, what happens to location, location, location?
I mean, it does ultimately become less desirable, I would imagine. I mean, we'll have to see the effects and impacts. But, a lot of developers have said we're banking on people taking the light rail. We're banking on people taking the rail trail.
It only goes north-south.
But, right. And so I'm anticipating thousands of cars on roads that, like you said earlier, used to carry, maybe a couple dozen decades ago. And it's just going to create quite a infrastructure mess.
Mike, I think there's a little bit of a split here, too. I mean, I think if you talk to some people who actually live in South End and ask them about the parking and the traffic, they're not as concerned about it as those of us that drive in and want to go to dinner in South End are. That they actually do walk to a lot of these places. They can get there pretty easily. But people who want to go, from other parts of the city and go into South End, I mean, that's a lot of the problem.
I think a big part of it is the employees. They have to come in. They come in the morning and they leave in the evening. They may not be sticking around afterwards. So those are the people that are going to be adding all that traffic, all that commuting traffic to those small, secondary roads.
Tony mentioned this a couple of seconds ago in the last segment. Residentially speaking, Charlotte Center City Partners says that South End's population density is of 11 people per square acre. It has increased 22 times since 2000. If I've done the math right, that means that the density is now 242 people per acre, and it's expected to grow another 60% in the next 6 years. That would be 387.2 people per acre.
I think it was 0.5 per acre in 2000, and I think it's now 11 per acre in 2018, I believe it was.
I'm just telling you where I got my figures out of. I didn't make this up. I got it out of something in print. So put those numbers into perspective. If they're even at all accurate, if either of our numbers are accurate, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It's going to be quite a mess. And again, I'm curious to see what either private developers or CDOT, what's sort of the plan, what the plan is. How are you going to, deal with this? How are you going to, adjust traffic signals? How are you going to, road widening is not always the answer. In fact, it's too late and it creates more traffic in a lot of cases. Yeah. But, the fact of the matter is, and, I've said this before, people will be driving to South End to work and not always exclusively taking the rail. So
I think that talking about walkability and density is like a positive thing ultimately. And it's, from an environmental perspective, sure, that's great.
Right.
But that's also what developers are touting, and it's sort of a justification for the massive developments that they're doing. you have to remember that this is Charlotte. This is not Brooklyn. I mean, you can't just flip a switch and say, all right, everyone, start walking, start scootering, because that's not really who we are. No. Yes,
so
Dan, we're working on getting there, but we're not quite there yet.
Dan on Twitter says, can we steer the impacts discussion away from the car-focused perspective of traffic and parking, instead highlighting the benefits of density and walkability? And there is something to be said for that, although you just said off the air that, Katie, that you have no desire for a heated saltwater pool or to walk to work. You want to drive. David Walters, though, an urban designer, emails us, location loves congestion. Look at any successful city. Congestion means people living, working, and spending money. Wow. And this is just the beginning, Danielle. We're talking about uptown spreading into South End. It'll all be one big conglomerate, particularly if they put that bridge, that walkable bridge over 277. We're also talking about towers going up in Ballantyne. We're talking about significant densified development in other areas of the city, like Plaza Midwood and Elizabeth. We all talk about not wanting to be another Atlanta. Aren't we already down that road irrevocably?
Well, I mean, I think it depends a lot on how, you know, I mean, some of the questions that Ashley brought up, like how we end up actually addressing these issues. I mean, part of the issue that Atlanta has, obviously, is sprawl. I'm not an expert on that city, but I know, you know, I mean, with Ballantyne, that certainly brings up those questions for sure. I mean, that's the number one question I get from readers on anything about what they're doing down there. So, but, you know, I mean, South End, I mean, the city, for better or for worse, the Center City Partners and some of these other groups, they see South End basically as becoming an extension of uptown. I mean, that's sort of the goal. Whether or not that's what it should be, that's a whole nother discussion. But, you know, I think it might just be the inevitability if that's the way that we're going. I mean, this might just be our new reality in terms of uptown and South End basically being this one area where there's a lot of traffic.
So where's Buckhead? Density. Is Buckhead South Park? Is that what the...
Yeah, maybe. Or
I've heard it compared to South Park and Ballantyne.
Yeah, Ballantyne, South Park, something
did
like
Buckhead
that.
Did Buckhead used to be cool? Or was it always... Was that, I mean, I'm not trying to say that
the loaded questions this morning.
Because everybody says that Buckhead is like the place to go for restaurants and stuff, but it's very, like, corporate.
It's pretty corporate, yeah.
So you wrote an article, Ashley, in the Charlotte Business Journal that included a quote from Travis Garland. He's the director of leasing for Atlanta developer Portland Holdings. They just bought the Sycamore Brewing property. They're putting up that 16-story tower there. He said that he views that building's potential in a way that references Atlanta. He said, we view it through the lens of Atlanta and seeing what the Beltline's done, that beachfront, if you will. Okay, what does that mean?
Basically, he's saying the rail trail is essentially like Charlotte's Beltline, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, they've worked a lot. They've built a hotel on the Beltline in Atlanta. They've done a lot with that. And he said with that, a lot of office tenants have said, well, you know, a lot of our employees will be able to, you know, again, bike and walk to work and things of that nature. But, you know, the rail trail just isn't as far along as the Beltline is in Atlanta. You know, we have U.S. Bank building that bridge and some things that may help extend it. But, you know, we're still far behind as far as making the rail trail this truly comprehensive, you know, network that connects not just South End and Uptown, but maybe even beyond. So I think his point there was, you know, we want to build on the rail trail as another mode of transit, as another mode of, you know, being near amenities, all that other stuff. And you're seeing a lot of developers orienting their developments to the rail trail.
So Karen on Facebook writes, Lordy, we are getting so boring. Everything looks the same. Traffic is hideous. Affordable rents, LOL. Will some of this be mitigated, Tony, by what you wrote about recently? And that is that people are working from home. 60%. There's a 60% rise. Tell me if these figures are right. The 60% rise in local home-based employment since 2013.
That's right. Yeah.
Continue to rise?
I think it will continue.
Won't
to
it
rise.
Have to?
Well, I mean, if the alternative is driving into South End, I think you're going to see it rise. No, I mean, you know, Charlotte's always been a city where you've had a lot of people that, you know, if they can be based anywhere, they're based here. You have obviously the two interstates. You've got a good airport. But, you know, we're really seeing a lot more of that. And it's really grown a lot in the last 5 years. And so, I mean, that certainly will help keep people off the roads at you know, commuting times. But, you know, the growth is such that you're going to see the
traffic. Do we know what the numbers are? How many? many people comprise that 60% rise, or what the total number of people working at home?
Yeah, I think it's about 50,000. It's about one out of every 12 workers in Charlotte works from home. Nationally, the figure is about one in 20. So, you know, we are ahead nationally on
that. Are employers talking about flex scheduling so that people don't have to come to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and leave at 5?
For the last couple decades, employers have been talking about that. They sort of go back and forth on that a little bit. I think some employers have reined that in a little bit. There used to be, you know, 5-10 years ago, there was this movement towards just sort of letting everybody work from home. I think, you know, the banks had these big stations down in Ballantyne where they would let people work out of there, try to be a little more flexible. I think they've reined that in a little bit, but you are seeing some flexibility, I think, among some employers. It's not, they don't just let anybody work from home, but at all hours, but I think you are seeing a little bit of flexibility.
So let's move a little east of South End to Dilworth. That of course is the neighborhood that's home to the hospital, Atrium Hospital, and they have long been seen to have been gobbling up every available scrap of land in that area so they can expand, even as another Symbiotic healthcare firm is about to move in. Somebody just bought the Keyman building on East Boulevard and the site of the Starbucks coffee shop on the corner of East and Scott. What? No! who and why? Who bought this? Why did they buy it, Katie?
Summit Healthcare Group out of, I think, Winston-Salem. They're kind of a regional developer. They build medical office buildings for private practice and hospital-owned groups throughout the Carolinas, and they're typically kind of the same-looking brick buildings, like, you know, 5 to 8 stories, I guess. That's what their website looked like, at least. And so it looks like they plan to eventually raise some of those buildings on the corner that they spent, I think, roughly $12 million on. I would imagine that the Starbucks would close. I don't know if you buy a property for 10 times what the old owner bought it for and just continue to just take in Starbucks rent for the next phase of its life.
Well, parking at that Starbucks has always been at a premium, and evidently they rented spaces from the Keyman building so their customers could park. When they start building the Keyman building, those spaces will go away.
Yeah, so what happened was these were a couple of different transactions. So they bought the Keyman building first, and so the Starbucks would have lost the Keyman parking that they were renting kind of behind the building. It's where you will always get a boot if you are not parked in the right place. So once Keyman was sold, the broker or the seller or something approached the guy who had owned the Starbucks for like 2 decades, basically said, hey, you guys are losing your parking. This guy, you know, looked at the property, looked at the value of the property and said, okay, I think it's time to move on from this. And he made a nice little profit, I think. But, you know, it's certainly that's going to be another area that's going to be changing pretty soon.
So they haven't I read about 5 articles yesterday about the Starbucks. Are they staying or are they going? I could never figure it out by reading these articles. Are they staying or are they going? I think they had a 20-year lease on the land or something like that. Or, I don't know.
It's, I think 10 more years, maybe?
10 more years? Okay, fine. Are they staying or are they going? Caffeine people want to know.
Seems unlikely. Well,
there was a permit filed with the city that said that called for the demolition of the properties on the Starbucks land, the Keyman property, and the, was it therapy?
Theory design.
And so, nobody is really sane, but if you sort of read the tea leaves, so to speak, you know, you can see what's going on.
So if you cross Scott Avenue heading west, you run into that 4 or 5 story apartment building with retail and some restaurants on the first floor. And evidently somebody has come in and bought the first floor. What are they going to do with it?
Abacus Capital is the developer who also bought like the Owens Bagels building in South End, and they're redoing that, and they're putting in like a snooze and all types of different new eateries. They're going to give that chunk in Dilworth a huge makeover as well, and I think it's going to probably
same or different tenants.
It depends on the terms of the leases, and I think that there are some tenants they might want to revisit, maybe bring in some new ones, maybe bring in some, you know, quote unquote hip popular tenants.
What would that be? Who would go and who would come?
I don't want to speculate on air, but...
What about parking?
Oh, that's a good question.
But that's always been a challenge in that building. And right across the street from that building is that empty lot that used to be home 100 years ago to the Epicurean restaurant. They tore it down, hoping, I guess, to develop it. It's been vacant for what, 15?
Long time.
20 years?
Years.
Yeah. They sell pumpkins and Christmas trees, and sometimes food trucks show up there.
Right.
Has that been sold, Ashley? Or
no, it's. I believe it's on the market for a ground lease, which is an interesting. It's not outright for sale. So I know Lincoln Harris listed it about a year and a half ago, and obviously lots of interest in that site. You can do quite a bit of density, I would imagine, on a parcel like that, especially in the middle of Dilworth. But yeah, no, I mean that land is still on the market. It's still, you know, sitting there, just kind of waiting for someone to come in. But yeah, I mean, once that goes, you know, we could see something very dense going there.
So whether or not that property is developed, you still have what's going on across the street,
right,
with the redevelopment of that strip mall in an apartment building, essentially, and then the Keyman building being developed into a multi-story something. If I recall correctly, and I know this to be a fact because I was on it yesterday, East Boulevard at that point is one lane in each direction. You put a five-story building that goes a block. What does that do to traffic?
Nothing good.
It's also at the intersection of a main route into town and the next block, a main route out of town, Scott and Kenilworth Avenues.
Well,
is anybody thinking about it?
Well, do you remember when East Boulevard used to be wider, and they narrowed it to right, one lane each way, but it hasn't
better.
Really backed. Well, it hasn't really backed up. I mean, I think that has largely. I don't know the engineering on it, but you know, I don't think it's gotten worse. By constricting it. Right. I don't know it's getting better if you start developing that area.
And if you look at what Atrium is doing with their rezoning, they have a bunch of maps filed, and you know they're doing this big rezoning. It's going to go from like 3.5 million square feet to 4.8 million square feet of space potentially, and they want to add new road connections and things of that nature. But the Dilworth neighborhood's like, is that going to be more cut-throughs? I don't know.
So that's further down Scott and Kenilworth, mm-hmm, toward where the hospital is. And here's what I read, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't see how this is possible. You reported in August that Atrium Hospital is planning to add professional and medical offices, nursing homes, rest homes, a medical school, residential units, possibly a hotel on 71 acres. On their campus or spread out through that lower part of Kenilworth and Scott?
So they own a lot of land, even things that aren't developed yet, even things that are residential lots on like Fountain View and things of that nature, they own that. So essentially what they're saying is we want to grow, we want to add new facilities to our existing campus as well as add, you know, kind of encroach the development a little farther, I guess, east or south. And so they're not necessarily saying we're going to build all this stuff. They want to get the zoning in place so they could build all those uses, including senior housing, including a hotel, and maybe a medical college.
Somebody asked me about this the other day. We were doing a remote at Queen's University, and the guy came up to me and asked about why we don't have a medical school. And when we come back from the break, we may get one because there is this partnership right now being developed or explored, or it's been signed, I don't know what, between Atrium Health and Wake Forest University. And Tony, you reported on it. So when we come back, we'll hear you tell us what they have in mind. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about growth and development with Danielle Shemtob of the Charlotte Observer, Ashley Fahey with the Charlotte Business Journal, Katie Peralta with the Charlotte Agenda, and Tony Macia with Charlotte Ledger. Can we just call you Observer, Journal, Agenda, Ledger? Can we just do that?
Let's mash it up.
Fine with me.
So we were talking just before the break about Atrium's partnership or announced partnership or intention to partner with Wake Forest University on a medical school. Where does that stand, Tony?
Sure. Well, Atrium has come out in just yesterday, I believe, and announced that it has taken another step towards making that happen. Now, they aren't giving a lot of details, but they have signed an agreement with Wake Forest to bring a medical school here. Again, we haven't seen the details, but that is something, obviously, that Charlotte's been wanting for a long time. They had come out in the spring and said that they were working toward that, and now that looks like that's going to happen. Gene Woods spoke last week at the Charlotte Rotary, and he said, you know, all signs look good. They're going to have a lot more exciting things to announce about.
How does this impact Winston-Salem? Are they worried about a talent drain up in Winston-Salem, Katie?
So there was a story in the Winston-Salem Journal last week that quoted just some local Winston-Salem residents. Just kind of there's a concern about the Charlotte Medical School campus eventually drawing resources from the Winston-Salem area and then potentially also luring the medical school away from Winston-Salem. And this has been sort of part of a larger trend with Charlotte and Winston-Salem in terms of the talent that Charlotte is attracting from Winston. Truist, of course, is the merger of BB&T and SunTrust, and that'll be based here. Krispy Kreme started moving some of its headquarters down here, and so, of course, now the med school, I think there's sort of this concern that there could be sort of a loss of talent up there. Yesterday, the two...
They're keeping the tobacco companies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're not recruiting those, I don't think.
Yesterday, Wake announced that they would build two big projects in Winston, though. So, like, it's a huge tower for ER services and intensive care, as well as an eye institute in Winston-Salem's innovation corridor, or whatever it's called. So still, there is going to be very much a medical school campus up in Winston, but it sounds like it'll be some sort of shared facility, just like some other corporations.
So development in South End was one thing, because that was a vast wasteland. But when you talk about development in Dilworth and Elizabeth and Plaza Midwood, you're talking about something completely different. These are older, established neighborhoods where the retail and business buildings in those neighborhoods have always been to scale of the neighborhood. Now we're seeing things that are well out of scale for the neighborhood, Danielle. Is this inevitable? Are neighbors pushing back at all in those areas? And when and where they do they ever win?
Well, I think it depends on the neighborhood. I mean, I think that there's certainly going to be, I mean, you brought up the example of Plaza Midwood. I think it was like a month or two ago when that main parking lot that everyone complains about with the booting, and that's where, you know, the Five Guys is. That parking lot, you know, there wasn't necessarily too much. There might be some anxiety, though. I think most people were like, okay, we'd rather see a parking lot where everyone's getting booted. We're not so sad about that. But I do think, you know, in general, that it depends, because that area, like, they have a lot of retail that's not necessarily pedestrian oriented. I mean, we can have we obviously had a whole conversation about whether people are walking places and biking places, but you know, it's sort of this transition from a more car oriented, a big parking lot that I live right across the street. I've never seen it full, and to these blocks that are kind of more South End like, really. And I think it doesn't, you know, doesn't necessarily, South End definitely does not fit every neighborhood. I mean, I know that a lot of people in Plaza Midwood, a lot of people in Dilworth, they would say, we don't want to be the next
But
South
like
End.
In Elizabeth, on Elizabeth Avenue, where Jackalope Jack's used to be, and there was a bar at the corner of Elizabeth and Caswell, and now they're taking all of that, and they're putting this honking building, and they've already put a honking apartment building across the street from it. And once again, this is a narrow road that was designed to be a neighborhood road in the middle of a neighborhood in 20, 30? What is that going to do? That just to the look, the feel, the traffic, parking, etc. And are people in that neighborhood pushing back at all on this?
I didn't hear too much pushback about that particular project. I think it's about four or five stories.
The Elizabeth Community Association has been very actively involved in that project back when Faison was trying to do apartments and retail.
Yeah, they were pushing back then.
They were very aggressively pushing back then. They've worked with Crescent Communities, which is the new developer of that project, who's going to do office instead, and got some concessions, got some things they wanted. But they've come out in support of it, and they've said, you know, we've worked with Crescent on this, and we're in a place now where we feel okay with it, but it's a very negotiated process.
One interesting thing about that is that they said they're going to have the parking be open to the public after business hours, so like it's also an office building, so they said, you know, afterwards you can park for the retail, so that might be one thing that you might see more developers explore.
So we have a Twitter. We're getting a lot of pushback on this growth and development idea from people out there in the ecosphere, and that's interesting. Comment on Twitter. It's about encouraging people to not use cars. Increasing the amount of lanes just means more capacity, which means more cars. Need to discourage driving. That's the point. Okay. What's the alternative?
I don't know
that's
how
the
to
question.
And I don't think anyone has proposed.
Because we're 25 years away from the Silver Line if it gets built.
Right.
Right?
Yes. I don't think anyone here has proposed chopping roads in half in order to reduce driving. I think all we're saying is planning. And that's the thing that neighbors are really frustrated about. You know, my commute to the YMCA has always consistently been 6 minutes. And when it takes 20, that's annoying. And I think the point
particularly when you can see it from where you are.
Sure. Sure.
It's like that scene in Office Space where the car is going slowly and the guy on the walker is going faster than the car.
It just occurred to me that if you can see the building that you're driving to and it takes you 20 minutes to drive, you could walk there in the same amount of time.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, all right. Changing habits is hard.
And I think that's the thing. You know, we've been a car-oriented city for so long. The way our city has been developed has been for cars. And so, you know, walking back on that is going to be tough.
So transit... there's going to be a meeting coming up on transit-oriented development, rezoning under consideration for over 1,500 parcels along the Blue Line rail corridor. City Council is expected to vote on this next month. And this is not stuff right on the line. It goes a half mile in either direction out from the line in these neighborhoods. What will this be like?
So this essentially is putting into place what council passed earlier this year, which is allowing greater density, different flexibility, different design standards for TOD districts. And so with this rezoning, if it passes, it means developers can go in and you know, do some more things, do, you know, again, bigger mix of uses, better design standards, different parking requirements. But I guess some neighborhood groups are a little anxious because you don't have to rezone those properties anymore.
Is this up and down the Blue Line or just the newest part of the Blue Line?
This is the entire Blue Line. Okay. So this is from all the way from UNC Charlotte all the way down to 485. I mean, this is the entire Blue Line.
Are people in these areas, are they on board?
It seems that most of them are. A lot of them are saying, yes, we are excited. We live in a transit neighborhood and we want that to see that kind of development. However, there's some degree of hesitancy. Mm-hmm. What does this mean? Are they going to build, you know, a giant tower next to my house, et cetera?
Want to spend a lot of time on this because we've talked about this in recent weeks on the news roundup, but Charlotte City Council just approved about $518 million for a $600 million expansion at the airport. It's going to give us, a bigger lobby, different TSA kind of gates, new roadways. We're always having new roadways at the airport, which brings up this question. We keep being told that Charlotte Douglas is not a destination airport. It's a pass-through. It's a transfer point. And yet, we keep building new roads and new parking lots, and the only people that use the lobby are people getting on board an airplane from Charlotte. So why do we need all this if we're not a destination airport? And if we are a destination airport, why don't they lower the fares?
Sounds like a lot of anxieties built up in one question there. that's a good question. I mean, you are seeing the originating passenger numbers. Those are going up. You know, anybody that's ever, you know, parked at the airport and you go in and the long-term one and long-term two and long-term three are all full and they redirect you to the daily where the rate's higher. You know, there are a lot of people flying out of Charlotte. That's going to continue growing as Charlotte grows. You know, the fares question, is a separate question that has to do more with American Airlines and its quasi-monopoly status out of Charlotte and the lack of...
Nothing quasi about it.
Well, it's 90%. I mean, you can fly pretty cheaply on Spirit up to Newark or down to Florida, but we are overserved, as a city. You can fly nonstop to a lot of places that cities of our size you couldn't do. Right. And that's one of the draws, frankly, why businesses keep coming here. It's a big draw.
Okay. One of the problems that growth has brought us is a lack of inventory in the housing market, and it's been really tight here in Charlotte for a long time now. Not enough inventory, rising prices. I don't know what mortgage rates are doing with the Fed cutting their rate last week, but how would you describe the state of real estate market, the residential real estate market, Ashley?
I mean, it's a story we've been seeing playing out, and maybe even to a more extreme level, that the fact that there's not enough supply to keep up with demand. There's a lot of people in the market right now with all the people moving here, but builders just cannot build fast enough to keep up with it.
Is there enough land? Can they buy land?
Well, I think it depends. You know, in Charlotte, it is getting more constrained. You're seeing a lot of people doing high-density townhouses, for-sale product, but just not your traditional single
single family homes. But if you go out to the region, I think that's where you're starting to see a lot of traditional Charlotte developers going out and saying, I can actually build a 200 lot subdivision in, you know, a different county. But then that again leads to more commuting and everything else. But it's a problem that's been playing out for the last several years since we've had this boom, and I don't see it slowing down.
I mean, some people are reluctant to move up because they're afraid to put their house on the market because they're afraid they won't be able to find a house that they want to live in once they sell their own home, which has slowed everything down. Is there any end to that in sight?
Most real estate agents say it's the new normal.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually, you know, economics would tell you that eventually prices are going to get so high that people won't be able to afford the homes, but we just haven't seen that yet.
One thing that you wrote about, Danielle, is people are flipping houses in Charlotte. We had a lot of house flipping going on prior to the Great Recession. That kind of ended during it, but it continued on television, which I think inspires people to go out and flip.
H-G-T.
And you say that it reached an all-time high in Charlotte in the second quarter of this year. First of all, where are they getting these houses to flip if nobody's selling anything? And what's going on here? What's driving this?
Yeah, it's actually crazy. I mean, I was looking at a figure, it's 9% of all home sales are home flips, which is just astronomical. I mean, I think some of it is, if you're really doing a lot of renovations, it's the properties that most people wouldn't be willing to buy because they don't want to spend, you know, $30,000-$40,000 to renovate a house. Mm-hmm. So that's one argument that people make for house flipping, is if you buy it and you're renovating it and it requires such renovations that 90% of people aren't going to be interested in buying it, then that is adding to the inventory. Of course, the downside or the, you know, criticism is that it might be causing gentrification or, you know, increasing prices depending on how much you're actually doing to the house. I mean, if you're just putting a few things on it and raising the price a whole lot, that might be pricing people out.
Unless you know what you're doing and have done it many times successfully in the past, it seems to me this is a quick and easy way to get yourself into big heaps of trouble.
Yes.
Can you make money? Do people make money flipping houses? Or do most people lose their shirts?
They're making a lot less money than they were. And I think part of that is the prices going up so much. You know, I mean, it's just so much more expensive to buy the house in the first place. Now you have to pay for contractors. They're so busy with all the other development happening around Charlotte. I mean, the cost of doing all of the rehab is going up. It's easy to get in hot water if you're not experienced, and even the experienced people. I mean, the guy I talked to in the story does like 100 houses, and the house I went to, he said, yeah, I didn't make a profit on this one. Yeah, I basically broke even.
So the banks, we have new banks moving into town. We have banks changing the way they do business. Digital banking has taken hold in a big way. Everybody I know has an app on their phone for their bank to do almost everything, including making deposits. But that has not stopped banks, Tony, from building branches. Why?
Well, you know, they're always building branches. They're also closing a lot of branches. Yeah. I think Bank of America, you know, that's closed about a third of its branches, I think, in the last 10 years. But, you know, as they move into new parts of town, they're building new branches. They just opened one in the last week or two at the Legacy Union, built their new Legacy Bank of America Tower uptown. You know, U.S. Bank just opened one on Tryon Street. So, I mean, they are opening these branches, but they're a little bit different.
Why are banks like U.S. Bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, I think, is scheduled to come here? Why are they doing that in the home of Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Truist, which is BB&T SunTrust? Why do they feel that we need more banks? And are the banks they're putting in here retail banks? Or are they commercial banks? Are they investment banks? What are they?
Yeah, I mean, these are retail branches that they're opening. And a lot of it has to do with, I mean, they do have some, you know, wealth management clients, you know, private banking clients, and they want to be able to open those to kind of to help serve those. I think part of it is also sort of, hey, we're going to take on Bank of America on its home turf. I think there's an element of sort of machismo, maybe a little bit on that. But, you know, I think they just see opportunity here, like a lot of companies in various industries do in a growing city. And I think they just sort of want to be here and be a part of it.
And we are seeing, you report, that we are seeing a change in the way bank branches look and feel. And there's this commercial on television that shows a bank and it looks like a cafe. So right. Is that what's happening when you write about this here in Charlotte?
Well, they are. In these newer branches, they are a little bit different than your branches of the past. They're not your traditional walk-in, there's a partition and a bunch of tellers waiting to cash your check. You know, the number of checks used for transactions is way down over the last few years. Checks account for only about 6% of all transactions. So it's gotten really, really small. So what they're trying to do with these bank branches now is they're trying to make them more sort of like education centers. Like, hey, Mike, come in. Yes, maybe you want to deposit a check, but did you know you can take a picture of that check on our app? Let us show you how to do that. They have conference rooms where they can have seminars. It's a much more open floor plan. They really want to introduce you to the technology and push you that direction while offering you services that you can maybe only get face-to-face if you want, you know, a refinance or something.
I spend my day talking to Erica. She's the Bank of America person. I've never done it in my life. I don't even know how it works. Tony Bassi is editor of Charlotte Ledger, also appears every Thursday morning on Morning Edition in our Bizworthy segment here at WFAE. Katie Peralta, senior editor of Charlotte Agenda. Ashley Fahey, real estate editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. And Danielle Shemtob, economic and growth development reporter with the Charlotte Observer. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.